This is a production of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.
Chanukah through the eyes of the mystics. Part 1, the triumph of surrender, finding the light and letting go. Shalom, I'm Rabbi Daniel Silverstein, and it's a pleasure to be teaching this for Elmad. In this first podcast, we're going to be exploring how letting go is actually the secret to triumph, and this involves the interplay of two of the Kabbalistic qualities, the Sefirot of the Tree of Life, called Netzach and Hod. Netzach, meaning eternity or triumph or endurance or perseverance, corresponds to our right leg or our right thigh, and Hod, meaning humility, gratitude, and glory, corresponds to our left leg and left thigh. Now, for the Kabbalists, the person is of course a microcosm of the divine, as the Torah says, we're created in the image of the divine. So these qualities map onto the person and also onto the divine. So it's a map of us, a map of the Ein Sof, the infinite one, and also a map of life and a way of understanding everything that happens in life. And Netzach and Hod are just two of the Sefirot, but through understanding how they interact, we can learn some fascinating lessons about life. Rabbi Isaac Luria, the Arizal, tells us through his student, Rav Chaim Vital in the Pri Eitz Chaim, that the secret of the 8 days of Chanukah is that she receives the light of Hod itself. And he says, she receives the light of Hod through the path of Netzach. Therefore, he says, we say Al Hanisim, a special prayer we insert into our Amidah prayer during Chanukah. We say that prayer during the part of the Amidah called Modim, which relates to Hod. So he's told us a few important things there. One really is the centrality of Hod to Chanukah, but also of the way that Hod and Netzach must interact for Hod to be healthy. That Hod has to receive light, as he says, from Netzach. So what do these abstract Kabbalistic terms mean in practice for us? One interesting way that we see Netzach and Hod interact is in the Al Hanisim prayer we just mentioned. We give thanks to the divine for the military victory of Chanukah, but strangely, there's a merging of identities, a fusion between ourselves and the divine. It's not always clear exactly if the fight of the Maccabees is our fight or God's fight. We thank God, essentially, for fighting their fight for them. It seems that the Maccabee warriors truly became vessels and channels for the divine will, to the point where the divine would just flow through them. And this, making ourselves a vessel for the divine, is a very important part of Hod, because Hod includes an element of surrender, of letting go. Of letting go of what we think we know, of letting go of what we think we are, and letting something greater than ourselves flow through us. That's how Hod can simultaneously mean surrender and humility and gratitude, but also glory. It's finding the glory of something greater than ourselves. This is in contrast to Netzach, which is that drive and perseverance to achieve victory at all costs, and which is very focused on survival. When we are manifesting Hod in its highest form, we're so devoted to letting life flow through us that we will do that even if it involves the ultimate self-sacrifice. And that's why one of the themes that correlates with Hod throughout many of our sources is actually the ultimate self-sacrifice of Mesirat Nefesh, of martyrdom. And indeed, the Hasmoneans, the Maccabees, were willing to give up their lives to do what they saw as uniquely necessary for them to do. And we know this clearly because they had no right to expect that they would win in a battle against the mighty Greek army. They were clearly outnumbered. They were clearly acting according to what they felt was necessary for them to express their unique beings and not according to the result. Acting according to the result would have been pure Netzach, but that was not the case here. Also interesting to note that Netzach, which is so concerned with the physical result, was not actually really manifest at Chanukah, meaning the Hasmoneans won a wonderful victory and they established a Jewish kingdom again, but it was very short-lived in physical terms. Only 200 years later, our temple was destroyed again, and we lost autonomy again. So in that light, it's actually a real question. Why would we even celebrate Chanukah anymore? Surely it was just a temporary blip on the road to destruction. And Hod provides an interesting answer. We're not only celebrating the physical military victory, but we're celebrating something spiritual that happened in that time. And it involves an element of surrender and humility and making ourselves a channel for something greater than ourselves. Let's look at how these ideas play out in some of our early sources about Chanukah. In the Talmud, in Tractate Shabbat, Bet Shammai say, on the first day, 8 lights are lit, and thereafter they are progressively reduced. And Bet Hillel say, on the first day 1 is lit, and thereafter they are progressively increased. So this is a famous machloket or argument about, do we light 8 lights on the first night and take one away, or do we light 1 light on the first night and gradually add? And of course today we light 1 light on the first night and we gradually add, as we usually do according to Beit Hillel. But underlying the legal argument here, there's a very deep conceptual argument about what Chanukah is about and our stance in life about some very important questions. We get a glimpse into these questions in the Talmud in Avodah Zarah. It tells us about the festivals of the idolaters, and two in particular called Calendar and Saturnalia. And the rabbis tell us that Calendar is observed on the 8 days following the winter equinox, Saturnalia is observed on the 8 days preceding the equinox. And then they tell a story related to this. They say, when Adam, the first person, saw the days getting progressively shorter, he said, "Woe is me! Perhaps because I have sinned, the world around me is being darkened and returning to chaos and confusion. This, then, is the kind of death to which I have been sentenced from heaven." So what did Adam do? He thought that he had destroyed the world through sin, and that the sun, getting less and less powerful as we approached the winter equinox, meant the whole world was dying. So he fasted. He fasted for 8 days. But then he got to the solstice. He got to the shortest day of the year, and the days started getting longer again. And what did he say? He said, "Oh, this is the way of the world. Minhago shel olam hu." And he began observing a festival for 8 days. The following year, he appointed both as festivals. And this is fascinating. He fasted for 8 days, then he celebrated for 8 days. And then the next year, he celebrated for all 16 days. Now, we can ask a lot of questions about this, including, why would he celebrate the first 8 days? The days when he in fact fasted the first time, the days when the days are getting shorter, and it looks like the sun is dying. What is there to celebrate in that experience? And perhaps it is, in fact, the inner experience that he went through at that time. He really thought that life was being taken away from him and the whole world, and he faced it as best he could, and then he came out the other side. And I think there's a powerful manifestation of Hod there in his surrender and his humility before the facts of life. And then, when life is reborn and the days are getting longer, he embraces it and celebrates it, and he's willing the next year to celebrate the whole experience. He's not shying away from, denying, or repressing the reality of darkness and death in the world. He's embracing the whole circle of life. This is in very stark contrast to another text we have that tells us that when it first began to get dark on the first night when Adam experienced real darkness, Adam cried out in fear, saying, "Oh my God, the snake is going to come and rape me." So God did something nice for him. God made him 2 flints, which Adam struck together, and then light came forth from the flints, and Adam said a blessing over it. So from that story, from that midrash, Adam is scared of the dark, and he's scared of being violated, and he cries out for help, and help is given to him from an outside source, from God, in the form of technology. And these two stories really beautifully illustrate Netzach and Hod in action. I said the first story was a great example of a Hod, of embracing what is the whole circle of life, life and death, light and darkness, in all of its challenging complexity and not shying away from it, and having an element of surrender and humility to it. But Netzach is saying, "No, I'm going to overcome the difficulty. I'm going to use technology, I'm going to use whatever God gives me, my intellect, whatever it is, to overcome the challenges of being alive in this world." These two really relate beautifully to Rav Soloveitchik's model of Adam 1 and Adam 2 in the wonderful classic book Lonely Man of Faith, that Adam 1 is all about technology and mastering the world and overcoming difficulties, whereas Adam 2 is a more spiritual being, more attuned existentially to the way things are, and less likely to mistake himself for a god. Now, as we saw in the story, Adam celebrates the whole 16 days, including the 8 days that he originally was fasting and having a very difficult experience. And that's because Hod really celebrates the unique experience of each individual, whereas Netzach is very focused on the result. Hod is really about the unique thing that each individual contributes to life that only they can. So of course, as we mentioned before, there's a connection between Hod and self-sacrifice. Because if I'm really appreciating the unique thing that only I can offer to life, and I'm really making myself a vessel for life to flow through me to the ultimate extent, then of course I'm willing to give up my life for that. And we see that in the behavior of the Maccabees. Fortunately, most of us today are not asked to go to that extreme and to manifest Hod in that way. But nonetheless, the challenge of Hod and of Chanukah is still there, to make ourselves a vessel for something greater than ourselves. And another very powerful way that can manifest is in one of the core meanings of Hod, which is gratitude, which we're going to explore more in the second podcast in the series. This hod-like quality of making ourselves a vessel for something greater than ourselves is really brought out beautifully by some of our sources. First of all, the prayer we say when we light the candles, Hanerot Halalu, talks about, just as the Talmud does, that we are not permitted to make use of the Hanukkah candles, because these are candles that burn for their own purpose, to publicize a miracle, to bring light into the world, and we shouldn't cheapen them by using them to do our daily tasks. The great Hasidic master, the Maggid of Koznetz, in his beautiful book Avodat Yisrael, talks about how lighting the candle in the Mishkan, in the tabernacle, is a powerful analogy for understanding our relationship with the divine. How is it that the divine asks us to serve life and the divine creator when everything we have is from the divine? Our life, our body, our energy, our blood, our speech, our thoughts, everything we're going to serve with is not even ours. It's actually given to us by the creator. So what is the meaning of our service? The Maggid says this is a great mystery, and he compares it to the light being lit in the menorah in the tabernacle. And he says, of course, the fuel comes from God, the wick comes from God, even the flame comes from God. But nonetheless, God needs and wants it to bring the divine into the world and make the world what the divine needs it to be. This teaching really beautifully illustrates the principle of Hod, that when we let go and surrender and make ourselves a vessel for something greater than ourselves, then we're able to be a channel for real glory. And finally, we have a beautiful midrash in B'midbar Rabbah Numbers Rabbah that really gives this idea over so well. It's talking again about Aaron lighting the menorah in the tabernacle in the Mishkan, and it says, this may be compared to a king who had a beloved friend, and the king told his friend, I'm coming to your home for dinner. Go home and make preparations for me. His friend went and prepared a simple bed and a simple table and a simple lamp. When the king came, with him came his surrounding entourage and a golden lamp in front of him, borne by a servant. When his friend saw all the honor of the king, he became embarrassed and hid all that he had prepared, for it was so ordinary. The king said, didn't I tell you I'm coming for dinner? Why haven't you prepared anything for me? His friend said, I saw all the honor that surrounds you, and I became embarrassed, and I hid everything I prepared for you, for it was so ordinary. The king replied, by your life, I reject everything that I brought. Because of my love for you, I want to use only your things. So too, the Holy One is all light, yet he tells Israel to light a menorah. As soon as they light the menorah, the Shekhinah arrives. Hope you enjoyed these teachings and that they assist you to have a more meaningful Hanukkah. And if you like this Torah, I encourage you to check out an online course I teach called Applied Jewish Spirituality through the wonderful organization Or Halev. That's ORHALEV.org. The course is found on their website, Applied Jewish Spirituality. I very much look forward to learning and practicing more with you. Thank you for listening. Chag Orem Sameach. Happy Hanukkah.
This is a production of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.